We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 25 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And Keisha, guess what? This episode means that we are a year into the Honor Roll.
It's true. I feel like we should have a party.
Well, we are going to have a party. We're going to have a party with Dorians because we are here to celebrate fierce and formidable women. And in fact, that's exactly what we're going to do. We have an inspirational story from not only a scholar, an advocate, but also a telemedicine pioneer. So let's learn a little bit more about Dorian. So Dorian Traub is an associate professor of social work at USC. Go Trojans. She developed parents as teachers at the USC Telehealth, the first partnership of its kind between a national home visitation model and a university-based telehealth clinic, something that we're finding incredibly important in this pandemic environment. In doing so, she also established the first virtual home visitation program, offering an entire home visitation model with fidelity via video conferencing technology, something I know our Dr. Ray loves here. This program was chosen as a named commitment by the Clinton Global Initiative and was selected as the winner of the Gary Community Investment Open IDEO Early Childhood Innovations Prize. In 3 years, the program offered 1,000 home visits and trained 25 home visitors in virtual service delivery strategies. This research from this scholar laid the foundation for a $1.2 million effort funded by the Heising-Simmons to make virtual home visitation available nationally during the COVID-19 crisis, which we are still living in. Her research agenda focuses on the utilization of technological solutions to provide early childhood health, education, and parent support services. Dorian has expertise in children's mental health, child maltreatment prevention, family support interventions, and home visitation. Her research has been funded by the National Institutes of Health and the Parsons Foundation, Queens Care Foundation, and the Overdeck Foundation. I think any foundation should definitely support Dorian. Dr. Traub sits on the board of directors of Child 316 and CTEP, and she received her doctorates and master's degree in social work from Columbia University. We love Columbia. And is a licensed clinical social worker in California and New York. She's got the best of both coasts.
Oh, it's true. I'm not sure about the Trojans, just saying. Go Vols. Even though we're not doing that great this year. But we're really lucky to have Dorian as one of our sheroes in education because she's doing great. And Dorian, each week we explore models of leadership together. And we focus on what we refer to as a pattern of M. We ask our guests who their role models are and how they've impacted your life, who your mentors are, when you looked in the mirror and saw something, any movements or mavericks that you might be familiar with or following.
And Keisha, don't forget, we got to catch that edgy babble. And, you know, I was a little intentional on mine. I actually didn't say what CTEP was. And partially it's because this is my beautiful intersection with Dorian. So Dorian, tell us a little bit about what is this CTEP thing and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. So CTEP stands for the California Emerging Technology Fund. And I'm super thrilled to be here to talk about that and about just technology in general. So the goal of the California Emerging Technology Fund, the singular focus, and I love a clear goal, right, is to close the digital divide in California. So California is a big state, right? But what folks, I think about when they think of California is Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, maybe a little bit of wine from the wine country. What folks don't realize is we have like several wine countries, but more so we have a huge rural expanse, huge. I think people are more aware of it now because we've had so many fires that have made national news. And so we have a huge rural expanse, which means a lot of those folks do not have great internet access, and that impacts everything. That impacts emergency response, that impacts education, that impacts employment. But even in our most urban settings, that access to internet is so vital because we live in highly dense cities in California. And so access to the internet makes it possible for people to telecommute, to access their health providers. And during this pandemic, it became vital for our kids to be able to access their education. And we saw the videos of youth sitting in front of McDonald's and Starbucks just trying to kind of hotwire their Wi-Fi because they didn't have adequate Wi-Fi in their home. So that's really what the California Emerging Technology Fund focuses on. And Frances is one of our newest board members. She made the erroneous, well, I guess that would be redundant to say erroneous error, but she made the error of actually responding to my cold call. Because I had seen her speak at a conference and I was like, this woman we need on the board. Because especially now, I mean, we've always had a focus on kids, but especially now with COVID and the focus on distance learning, we needed somebody that really understood this space. And for a while, I was the only voice. So
I don't know.
Happy to partner. Yeah, happy to partner.
Sounds like you guys are going to solve a lot of problems for the kids and citizens of California. And, you know, the digital divide is something we've talked about for decades in my space, EdTech. And even to say, go so far as to say it should be a utility, which gets a lot of pushback. But yes. I still stand pretty firm on that. And we're so happy.
I agree. And I say it's a civil
right. I agree as well. Yeah. Well, come on, Dorian. Let's get together. let's make this thing work. Let's just bust a move. Thank you so much for that incredible definition of CTEF. And I know it's going to do great work. It already does, but I know it's going to do great work for the citizens of California. Now, let's get started with our infamous M's. Can you share with us who your role models are?
Yeah, so, you know, my role models, I think because I am a woman, tend to be other women. And I am particularly drawn to women who have a deep focus on children. You know, and I can't explain that. I've always felt that way even before I had my own children. It certainly was solidified when I had children. So I, the kind of the three that stand out to me are Michelle Obama, Elizabeth Warren, and Sylvia Acevedo, who is was the head of Girl Scouts USA. And, you know, I think there's a common thread through all three of those women that is compelling. First of all of them have faced some sort of childhood adversity themselves, either, you know, poverty, inequality. Sylvia herself came through a STEM field of, you know, astrophysics as a woman of color when that was almost unheard of. And then they have parlayed that into a deep investment in the next generation, especially a next generation of young women. And I just appreciate women who are willing to step forward and climb the ladder, but then extend a hand behind them and not believe or buy into this false rhetoric that because it was hard for us, it should be hard for everyone, that there's some sort of litmus test out there, that if you can get over it, then you belong in the club.
This is a beautiful list. I love the intersections you mentioned of the focus on children and that they are your sheroes as well. You know, I always say we need to focus on children through the perspective of a team kid. You're there to support their learning and backwards plan from their needs. And you've definitely picked role models that really exemplify this. And I'm curious, as you think about some of these characteristics and the ways that you love to look at leadership, who have some of your mentors been?
So a lot of my mentors have been people professionally that I just sought out because they were a port in the storm for me. So one is the dean of the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis. Her name's Mary McKay. And she just took me under her wing when I was like a social work student and just, you know, bright-eyed and overwhelmed, and, you know, never made me feel unimportant, never made me feel diminished, and was always just the greatest cheerleader. And so that her work stayed with me, and she has been, you know, continued to mentor me through multiple career transitions. But I will also say, I think an important element of who she is somebody who cares deeply about children. Her work is all about children. And she's a mother herself. And so what I find is that the people who mentor me are the people who are also moms of you know, any generation. It's who I don't know why, but it is who I gravitate to. And I just am always so impressed with how moms will show up for one another and will show up for other people's, the idea that there's no such thing as other people's children. That, you know, we all have this collective responsibility to help one another out. And that's just always really impressive to me. Even the other day, I had to rush my pet to the emergency vet. And I'm on the, it's COVID, right? So you can't even go into the emergency vet. So this tech comes out, takes my dog, and then the vet calls me on the phone in my car. And I'm talking to this woman, and she's saying, has your dog eaten anything? And I said, I have young kids. Yeah. I have no idea what my dog's eaten because, you know, they're dropping things. And this woman understood me immediately. And then at the end of the call, she said to me, we're going to get your dog stabilized. You can leave and then just come back whenever. If you have to pick kids up from school, it's okay. Like, just your dog's fine here. And I said to her, are you a mom? And she's like, of course I am. And I thought, she understood immediately what my day looked like, right? That I was at the emergency vet watching the clock thinking, okay, when is my kid going to get out? Who can I call for backup if I'm still here with the dog? How do we keep the kid calm that the dog is sick? You know? And that's who I gravitate to.
I'm telling you, Dorian, when I just became a mom when I in my 50s. So I'm an old first-time mom. Thank you. But I've never experienced stress as much. And Francis can testify to this because we've been friends for a very long time. I have never experienced the level of stress that I've experienced as a mom before now. I'm just trying to juggle all of those things while you've got this kind of burden of your child's life on your back. It's super challenging. So yes, lift our hands up to all the incredible moms in the world. Hey, when did you look in the mirror and see a leader in the reflection?
So, That's such a good question. And it gets back to that. So I think the theme that I see running through what I'm saying to you is this idea of helping other people out, right? And that's why I'm drawn to women in leadership. And I think the same idea, of course, there are parents out there and moms out there who aren't invested in helping one another, but that's not my village. My village are the ones that are just going to roll up their sleeves and dig in and help no matter what. And I realized I was a leader when I was in an incredibly male space where that wasn't the norm, where the norm was to try to gather accolades and to be very self-protective and to put up walls around the work that you were doing. And I was in a situation where something had just gone terribly wrong. And I watched a bunch of men hot potato the issue between each other, everybody absolving themselves. And finally, I stepped forward and I just said, if it will allow us to move forward, I am going to accept the ultimate responsibility for this error. I had nothing to do with it, actually. But I was like, this is ridiculous. It's nothing. Just say sorry and move on and let's get this moving forward. And I realized I was the only person in the room willing to do that. And that was, I think, the moment that I realized I had a leadership potential that many folks around me didn't.
Yeah, your leadership is definitely in the village with the mom tribe, as you mentioned, and other women that are willing to, you know, be a model and not a critic, you know, to actually really do the work and help others learn from what it means to, you know, take leadership to that line and be able to step over it. And, you know, we love to also find out insights around how you think women are changing the world. You just shared one example of how you have, but how do you see it, you know, this whole tribe of women really shifting and shaping the world?
Yeah. And I love right now, I feel like we're in such a magical, beautiful time. It's been like the silver lining of COVID for me, because I feel like women are stepping forward and saying enough is enough. Like, we cannot do it all. And so that's where I see women pushing the agenda. For the first time, I'm seeing a real credible potential policy solution in Biden's Family Cares Act, where we could have paid family leave, universal preschool, you know, early, high quality early care and education opportunities. And those were things that have been talked about by all parties, but nothing that was actually feasible has been extended. And I think that's only through women just stepping forward and saying, hang on, you cannot treat us as the de facto solution for every societal need. We, you know, like, we can't work, we can't raise families, we can't raise productive members of society and have absolutely no income latitude for ourselves or personal relief. And, you know, nothing has shown that to me more than our COVID relief bills, which really showed that poverty is a policy decision in this country. And when we want to invest in families, we can make that choice, and people can thrive because of it.
You know, Dorian, that's incredible. I love that statement. Poverty is a policy decision in this country. And I could not agree with you more. I mean, sometimes it can be a personal decision. I've certainly witnessed that. But it is more times than not that policy decision. I just so appreciate that statement. It seems like you have probably encountered a lot of female mavericks in your career and in your personal world as well. Who might you be watching that we all need to be paying attention to?
Well, I seek out the female mavericks personally. That's just who I find interesting. So, you know, the one that I've been watching a lot lately is an author and activist named Glennon Doyle. And she's been on my radar simply because, you know, she was a Christian podcaster who focused a lot on motherhood issues, and then her marriage dissolved and she wound up marrying Abby Wambach, the really super amazing famous soccer player, and is now, you know, raising, involved in a, you know, a same-sex union and has this amazing gay family. And I just think, you know, and is not afraid to step forward when, and, you know, and break this Christian paradigm that she was in. And so I love to watch that. I am watching heavily what's happening in Texas around their abortion ban. And I was talking yesterday to Eve Rodsky, who's the author of this book called Fair Play, and it's really about how you can balance domestic duties. And she had this fantastic idea that our generation has become, especially like Gen Xers and some millennials, became devoid of policy engagement and political engagement because we believed Roe versus Wade could never be overturned. And we're watching it be slowly eroded through a very long process, right? A very long policy process where we can't afford to be disengaged anymore. And I think it plays out also in Biden's CARES plan too. Like, you know, how long have women, my whole life, I've heard the stories of women trying to balance it all and feeling like they were failing everywhere. And that's not because they're failing. That's because there's absolutely no safety net in place for them. And so those are the things that I'm watching, are those mavericks who are just like pushing the envelope and saying, you know, what happens in our personal sphere are public issues and have policy implications.
Yeah, I love that you have a deep understanding of the impact of policy and how it's really manifests how our belief systems are lived out in society, right? And then that incredibly important reminder around love is love, you know, in its purest form, and how we are so inclusive and supporting of one another in all the different ways that families and love shows up. You know, you also mentioned the dynamic of what can happen in families around the concept of fair play. And so it really comes back to that balance and self-care. And as Maverick women and women changing the world, you know, there's some challenges with taking care of yourself. You know, Keisha's going to tease me, but I just bought one of those like 90-day planners. And one of the first things it does is says like, what are your self-care routines and how do you build out your habits? And making sure that you really do find that balance. And so I'm curious, you know, from Dorian's playbook, your next 90 days, what are some self-care routines or practices that our listeners might learn from when it comes to your experience?
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you asked this question because I think the people that are good at self-care are people who had, who burned themselves down and had to build themselves back up. I don't know anybody who is like proactively into self-care, right? It's and so I've just burned myself out over time. And actually what caused me to have to understand self-care was a traumatic event. Like I had a student who stalked me and my children, you know, just random. Random person was just mentally unwell. And, you know, in my capacity as a professor, they interacted with me and it just, you know, went awry. But it was horrifying. And it wasn't until like my whole neurological system shut down that I realized like I couldn't even read a book. I couldn't focus. And I needed something to fill my time. And so believe it or not, I started quilting. I was from a family of quilters. I knew how to sew. And I was like, I'm going to see if I can quilt. And then it became an obsession because almost like a hypnotic thing to just be sewing, right? And so that became my self-care. But what I've learned through that is that people will tell highly motivated women that they can have it all because it's really taboo to tell women they can't have it all, right? But like I said before, there's no system in place to necessarily help you have it all. It took me a long time to realize nobody was going to look out for me but me. And so I now realize that I have to demand the time for self-care. That demanding a period of quiet to reflect isn't being selfish. It's being actually a productive person. That I, when I am so overstimulated and overwhelmed, I'm not good to anybody.
Yeah, I think as moms, I struggle with that because I struggle with schedules, keeping my kids on good schedules. And Francis, the only thing I'm going to tease you about is if that 90-day planner is paper.
It sure is. Paper daily planner.
Oh my goodness.
Not a paid spokesperson. I just love it.
You know, somebody was telling me the other day about these planners and about like bullet journaling. And I said, I can't do the paper version because what I inevitably do is focus on finding the perfect pens to write. Because you can see like how much I want to avoid actually taking care of myself. The thing that's going to help me take care of myself is the perfect colored gel pen. And
so there you go. That's it. I agree. And I always like to get the erasable pens too, because I might change my mind and I don't want to be committed to anything, quite frankly.
You know, I'm going to introduce you since you mentioned quilting. I'm reminded of the research of Csikszentmihalyi around flow. So whatever helps you find your flow, whether it's doodling, the pen, the quilting, where you have high engagement and time just escapes, we need more of those moments, don't we? Just more and more.
Yeah, we really do. We really do. All right, my friends, now we're going to move to a little game of insights that we play to finish off our podcast. And it's a finish this thought game. So here's the first one, an event that changed my worldview.
Yeah, I probably have two of them. I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record here. I keep talking about being a mom, but it really did change my worldview. I mean, like it just, and Keisha, what you're saying just so resonates with me. There's something that happens like almost like neurologically when you have a child that moves you outside of yourself, and you have this superhuman strength, right? So that was definitely one. I will say the other one that changed my worldview in a really interesting way is September 11th, because I actually lived in New York during those terrorist attacks, and I was a mental health professional. And so I worked the mental health relief. And as awful and horrifying and scary as it was, it softened one of the hardest cities in the U.S., right? Communities came together. And what I saw was these communities come together in amazing, beautiful ways. And I always talk about this even when talking with my students about interacting with police. And I'm very aware of the current political climate around police, but my interaction at that time with community police officers was incredible. And watching these individuals who were trained so beautifully in responding to people's mental health, but also their feelings of safety and security, was such a gift to me. It gave me a window into what could be.
Yeah, you know, one of our podcast guests, Kim Mitchell, who really served a life of military service, connects in many ways to the same story that you shared about just the compassion that she saw in the city of New York during the time of 9/11, and how in many ways the pandemic has brought that back to this space, you know, our compassion for humanity and for one another. As we think about the folks that really impacted that time, it also is a story of strength. So I'm curious, finishing with this sentence starter, how did you become a stronger person?
I definitely think surviving that period of being stalked by a student was one of those things that made me a stronger person. I like to call those elements phoenix moments, like I said before, where you just burn yourself down and you have to rise from the ash. And that's what always helps me be brave, because I think some of the most amazing growth personally that I've had are after those moments of total self-destruction. And, you know, it just leveled me. And it was the weirdest position to be in, to be somebody who knows how to treat trauma, completely understands trauma, and to be able to do so little for myself. But I was, you know, grateful. I had an amazing village, right? I'm a social worker. I know lots of social workers. I had amazing people around me who loved me enough to come to me and say, you are not okay. Like, you think you're okay. You think that because you can show up to work every day, you're okay. But if somebody walks by you, you jump out of your skin. And you don't have to live like this. And then it allowed me to take a step back, to acknowledge my humanity, and to seek out a new skill set for myself that, you know, I don't sweat the small things anymore because of it.
Yeah.
Making lemonade out of lemons. And honestly, I don't know how you went through that experience with your family involved too, because I can only imagine, you know, the feeling of protection that you had for them. So I'm so sorry you had to go through that. What about this one? My life improved when I
made a living wage. That, it, you know, this idea that money can't buy happiness, money can buy happiness. Because people who have had financial insecurity don't understand. It pervades everything you do, right? It's like, can I afford this cup of coffee? Can I afford to pay my rent this month? And I was gainfully employed. I was a social worker in a big fancy hospital in New York City. And I was living month to month, you know. And once I was able to figure out how to get a living wage for my work, and, you know, I was only trained in a field, I think, especially because all of us are in the education sphere, too. And that's a completely undercompensated field. It's really challenging because you're trained for this like specialty area that you're passionate about, that society tells you is so important, but then you're completely undercompensated for it and expected to just kind of rob Peter to pay Paul to make it happen. But once I was able to make a living wage, it just opened up options for me. It opened options for me to give of my time to others, to be able to reach back down that ladder and try to pull people up.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate when we look at the living wage conversation in education. I remember being told when I first started, education is volunteer work with a stipend. You better do it because you love it. And I just thought there's so many things that are wrong with that, right? And then it also reminded me, as you were speaking of this, I remember quotes like crazy, and I will never forget in my seventh grade health class, my teacher had on the wall, money can't buy you happiness, but happiness can't buy you groceries. And always just like that polarity and that tension of how you find the space to do what you love, but also be able to provide for your family and yourself. And, mm-hmm. you know, so many of the policies that you spoke about today and the lens that women bring to that definitely strengthens that, no doubt about it. You know, here's another one for you, Dorian. I love your thinking around this one. A decision that changed your life.
Yeah, definitely to become a mom. And for me, it was very much a decision. Like it was a planful choice that I was going to have children. And it changed the way I think about everything, like everything. I have daughters. So in some ways, it completely even changed the way that I think about being a woman in society. Because it's one thing to think about it for yourself and another thing to think about it for your daughter out there in the world. And I have, my daughters are women of color. And so that also becomes I am a white woman who has been able to tap into almost every element of white privilege you can think of. I grew up in a very low income circumstance, and somehow I parlayed that into going to Columbia University, right? That's like white privilege at its finest. Being a mom to daughters of color has really, really changed how I view everything that I do. Everything. And it definitely, I always was invested in working with children. Just, I was like that kid who was like playing with other kids' little siblings at the park. Like I just have always loved the little ones. but it definitely made me recognize that there truly is no such thing as other people's children, because other people's children impact my children.
It reminds me of Lisa Delpit's work around how we educate other people's children, right? And just really understanding who we are and the honor and privilege we have to be a part of children's lives. You've also marked just the incredible consciousness that one must bring to that work too. Keisha, I'm going to be coming to you. And one of the things that Dorian really marked was the system to help us have it all, right? What might like that look like? And I'm definitely walking away with that, permeating my brain and keeping my consciousness going. And I'm curious what you're learning from this conversation, Keisha.
Well, I love Dorian. That is what I've learned. And she's my new best friend.
The tribal.
Sorry, Francis. Just kidding. I'll keep you too. I love you. I can love you both. There's enough love in my heart for both of you. I think it's incredible that you're a leader in telemedicine with the heart of an educator. I've been in the telemed field previously, and not many of them have the heart of an educator. And I love it that you bring that to the table and to that space. I love your momhood. I love that you made an intentional choice to be a mom. I think that, that kind of does separate, you know, the men from the boys, to use a, cliche, but, I think when we make those intentional decisions, it's just, I don't know. It resonates more in kind of the domino effect that having a child is going to bring to your life. And having daughters of color, I believe, changed your lens on life for the better. I think that you have an incredible, vivacious spirit. Your lens on policy and how policy kind of dictates everything in our lives. Susan Gentz, a really dear friend of mine, she's you can hear her cheering if you just listen for a little bit, because she loves policy. And she will love listening to just how you embrace it and how you envision it affecting every aspect of our lives, whether we recognize it or not. I think it's cool, and I'd love to have your thinking around this as maybe a closing. When we think about our daughters, I have a daughter too, and we think about the life they live and kind of the gifts that we've given them, especially in policy, right? And I wonder what challenges they're going to take on in their lives. And how can we prepare them to take on those challenges instead of being passive, like, yay, our moms did all this rock star work to get all these policies in place, and now we've got, you know, life everlasting, versus what I think I want my daughter to be is, you know, what did my mom not do that I need to do? That's what I want her thinking to be. But I'm curious what your message is to your daughters.
To be unapologetic, to show up as themselves, their authentic selves, unapologetically, and to not allow anybody to, I always tell them, you never ever make yourself small to fit in someone's small mind. Because I think that's a message we send girls a lot, and, you know, to conform, and that it's not necessary. But I think, you know, for my own daughters, because motherhood has had such an impression on me, I don't want them to feel like that has to be the choice for them. And I think that's really important, because I think in society, we kind of do this awful thing where we exalt motherhood, but then we don't acknowledge how hard it can be. And, you know, we act as if like postpartum depression is this rare thing, whereas postpartum depression is probably more common than postpartum joy, because just that postpartum period is really hard. And so, you know, I just want my daughters to recognize that as amazing as being their mom has been for me, you have to have an identity outside of that. That like my life, once they are grow up and have their own goals, my life will still keep going. I will still have things to keep working on. I just happen to be super passionate about children and families and making sure families have access to resources. And I will do that with or without their impression on my life. So that's the other thing I want to say, like, you know, that they should have holistic goals for their entire lifespan, because I think we spend a lot of time teaching women to like just focus on their 20s, like they have to have certain boxes checked by the time they're 29 years old. Like, Keisha, that's why I'm so glad to hear you became a mom at 50. Like, that's incredible. Like, there is no timeline. These are all artificial. Yeah.
I'm hearing loud and clear, be large and take up lots of space with that voice and with your goals and knowing your passion that lives in that space. You know, Keisha and Dorian, I can't thank you enough for being part of today's learning. I know we are curious to continue even learning more, and we want to learn more about what our listeners might be thinking about as a result of this conversation. And really even thinking about the spirit of mothers that has traversed this conversation, whether it be motherhood exactly for yourself or the path that you pick to be a mother figure for somebody else or those mother figures in your life. Let's make sure we honor that spirit and that journey somehow today as you listen to this podcast and connect with others. And speaking of connecting, we always have a coaching question that might linger with our listeners and linger with ourselves. And so, Keisha, here's today's coaching question. What might be a phoenix moment where you can support yourself and others in being brave, using voice, and building again? So again, in the spirit of Dorian, what might be a phoenix moment where you can support yourself and others in being brave, using voice, and building again? We're going to quilt all of those ideas together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Dorian is going to quilt all those ideas together. And a beautiful piece. You know, Dorian, we can't thank you enough for being part of our time today and joining our honor roll community. We are excited to build this community and to just grow this network of strong, fierce, and formidable women who can continue to enrich one another's lives as we journey on this earth. So thanks so much for just being part of that and for sharing your spirit of motherhood and your advocacy of children. And to our audience, we want you to join us on our next podcast where we highlight another Shero in education and explore their M's. And please don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, and respond to that incredible coaching question that Frances shared earlier. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.